Money and markets. The bond market has had a come to Jesus moment this week. We see the Fed continuing to taper, I think a good thing, but bad news flowing from Iraq and Ukraine, and the U.S. Treasury market was clearly under pressure. Dollar under a small amount of pressure, but Treasuries more. We saw the 20-year Treasury ETF down about 1.25%. That's a very big move for one day. Now, it's up year-to-date 13%, which puts the S&P up 4.75% to shame. So there's no doubt about it. Bonds have had an incredible year to the shock and amazement, as I've said before, to all of us. But clearly there's pressure on that market. The Fed lowered their growth projections and indicated that interest rates would stay low for the year. We've seen lots of concerns about liquidity in the bond market. I talked in the wrap-up this year about how Wall Street was laying off a lot of people in the fixed income divisions. Dodd-Frank clearly pulled a lot of liquidity out of that market. If you watch the movie Margin Call that we covered in Let's Go to the Movies, you get a sense of, you know, how tons of people churning paper can create liquidity. That's not necessarily a good thing. This is a change that has to come. But we do show Fed minutes and various discussions showing consideration of concern for liquidity in the market and what could happen to mutual funds if the liquidity seizes up and you get a lot of bond redemptions. Part of the reason that's coming up is PIMCO, of course, has now had 13 months of straight outflows. And given the fact that yields continue to come down, that's not surprising. But the reality is the overhang of debt is likely to push money towards real things, stocks, real estate, commodities. Because if you look globally, we have more sovereign debt than we have capacity of sovereign governments to really carry it. The Argentine president announced this week that they're going to defy a U.S. court order for repayment of debts. We had hedge funds accumulate some of their debt positions. So Argentina, which has been a country that's gone through more economic turmoil than just about any place on planet, is facing even more. But it's a reminder to everybody that we cannot afford all the debt. The U.S., of course, continues to print. We have a report this week that $69 trillion in wealth in America will be inherited by 2052. That's sort of the wealth being passed by generations, of which the federal government is expected to get $5.6 trillion in taxes. However, the national debt just passed $62 trillion and continues to climb quickly. So the issue of how we build and create wealth and how we deal with the debt is even more tense, particularly as you see in the international news, more and more pushback globally of different countries not wanting to continue to carry you know, passing their savings to the United States to finance the continued game, if you will. We see an announcement that the central banks are shifting enormous amounts of investment into investment in the equity market. The idea is that that is because rates have been low and this is how they're going to get earnings. However, I think, you know, the big question in my mind, too early to tell, is this a key sign that a crash up is being engineered? A conversion to equity model that we've talked a lot before on the Salieri Report. I'm going to continue to talk about it, but I think it's a bellwether piece of news and one we are going to have to watch closely. Needless to say, one of the reasons the equity markets globally have done so well is, in fact, that money has been shifted and it's quite a big position. Check that article out if you're interested. More and more, I'm beginning to wonder if some of the bailout money, instead of going to clean up the bond market, went to basically cleaning up some of the naked short selling and other sort of drags in the equity markets. No doubt there were a lot of smart money that bought equities cheap in 2008 and 2009. If they use that money to clean up the equity market instead of the debt, they're going to get quite a run for their money. And then, of course, in the engineering of governments, the governments can, as far as they're concerned, get hung with the debt. Gold and silver moving up, but it may be only a blip, so I would be careful, because if you look at the charts, they're very much entering overbought territory, so I would be careful. We may have found the bottom, we may have not. So far, precious metals has held the line sort of better and stronger than I thought it would, but again, I think it's early, a lot can happen. There is real pressure as the growth slows down in the U.S. to get the trade deals with Europe and the Trans-Pacific Partnership done. Again, those are being held up by the election. Harry Reid having said he wouldn't touch them during an election year. There's also pressure on immigration reform. There is a tremendous urge on the part of the people managing the economy to get immigration reform done in two respects. One is, if you bring in lots of young people, we see reports on the internet this week that lots of young people are encouraged to come in and sort of, you know, go around the border guards. But lots and lots of young people can help kickstart the economy, as well as a big piece of immigration reform is if you give resident status to anybody who's graduating from college or university here, that will help to flow money into college and universities, which are clearly under stress. But it means you have an extraordinary amount of talent from all over the world coming and really kickstarting your entrepreneurial sort of venture capital. And if you look at the intellectual capital flowing from around the world, I'm very much in favor of doing that. I think it's a great idea. One of the things to keep an eye on as you're watching this tension over the sort of slowing growth in the economy is the efforts by Amazon, Apple, Google to build wallet and other payment systems. We see Amazon put out its new phone. You can point and click at a barcode and just order. Kind of scary. PayPal, too. We see changes in PayPal, but PayPal is clearly in the running. Part of the breakaway civilization's plan to sort of jump the curve on a new currency system is to use the smartphone infrastructure and the mobile payment systems to re-engineer how things are done. As I said, what they want more than anything is the digital currency. They can't push for that until the hardware and software is in place. And so keep watching developments in this area because it's going to be a critical variable in the course of events. And I thought the Amazon announcement was very important. We did a special report this week. Stephen Roach, author of a new book on China, which I strongly recommend to you, called Unbalanced. And it's about the need for the U.S. and China to rebalance their economy. What Roach says is, you know, we've had a period, 15 to 20 years of false prosperity where China finances us buying lots of consumer goods that we can't afford. And we proceed to buy from China. So that creates a lot of employment and around we go. And we need to stop that. We need to cut down our consumption and China needs to increase consumption and service. It's a very well done book. It's very sound. He doesn't get into the covert side of life, which, you know, so in that sense, he and I don't necessarily see eye to eye on a lot, but there is enormous amount in the book in terms of excellent overview of many aspects of the Chinese economy and the reforms underway and the difference in the two cultures and the importance of those cultures not going to war, but rather finding ways of aligning. One of the most interesting parts of the book is his discussion of the impact of the internet on the U.S. versus China, and how it's been a real tool of division in the United States as opposed to China, where it's brought people together. I think there's going to be more focus on that impact of the internet. The speed at which people are getting onto the internet in China is dramatic. And of course, they now have more people on the internet than North America, and pretty soon more than the English-speaking world. That's going to have a dramatic impact, I think, on society globally. A lot of the coming IPO from Alibaba, I think, is going to focus people on the nature of this shift and how important it is. And I think it's critical for all of us to understand, so I recommend that book to you. This week we published Promoting Women Part 5. That's the fifth part in a series I've been writing about this effort to promote women in leadership positions, I think both for good reasons and not so wonderful reasons. This one was about the fact that the Clinton juggernaut for president seems to have stalled a bit. It's really both the Bush and the Clinton sort of early corporate effort to see if we couldn't push them way in the lead seems to have run into reality. But I talk in this one about Hillary Clinton. She, week before last, made a comment that when she and Clinton left the White House that they were dead broke. And of course, the expression dead broke means different things in when you run in different circles. But if you are anybody in America who's struggling with the financial situation that was very much created with the help of the Clintons and many of the things they did that created their personal wealth, dead broke means something else. One of the stories I put up last week was the story of a woman who died in a prison cell alone because she was serving a 2-day jail sentence because she wasn't able to pay her child's truancy fines, and so she had to go to prison. But, you know, debt broke in America means, for many, many people, means something very different. And the thing that was so shocking about what happened is we're talking about someone who has very significant campaign experience. Hillary Clinton has campaigned in two presidential campaigns for her husband. She's run an unsuccessful presidential campaign for herself, two successful campaigns for Senate. So this is somebody who should know better. And the fact that she doesn't really speaks to the fact that we see worlds diverging in a way that with the presidential election coming up in 2016, you know, things could shift in remarkable ways. So I was thinking it was kind of a grease lightning for both Bush and Clinton, but the environment says no, it's not. House Republicans elected Representative Kevin McCarthy from the Central Valley in California as the new majority leader, replacing Eric Cantor. It's an interesting choice. McCarthy's area's district is hit hard by drought, so it's an area that knows agriculture, petroleum, and the black budget. The China Lake facility is in his area. So it's going to be very interesting to see what McCarthy going into that position does and the policy that comes out of the Republican Party. Again, I think the communication that's going to occur in this election, is midterm election, is going to be very, very interesting. And the pressure is going to be absolutely on to keep stock market high and the economy looking good.